Major Hun, Royal 43. You're saying that Lieutenant Maguire had been captured in an ambush. Did any of these people who were taken prisoner manage to get back to you during the war?
No.
None of them managed to escape?
We had some that had been taken prisoner on the desert.
Yes.
And when we were in... No, before we got to Italy, when the Italians sort of surrendered completely...
Changed sides as well.
That's right. We had some of them got back, escaped then. I think Colonel Byrne was one of them who was taken on, and Lieutenant Churchill, he managed to get back, and a few others. But none of that were taken in Italy by the Germans ever got back.
But by this stage, I think we had got some Italian troops on our, you know, on our side fighting. Did you ever see anything
no,
of them?
No, they, I don't know if they were on the American Fifth Army side with General Mark Clark, but we certainly didn't see them on our sector.
And you mentioned earlier on that you'd seen something of the partisans. You know, did they provide you with any?
Not
serious help.
Personally, or I think probably different sectors to us. They probably took part, but we didn't have any dealings. What we did have was one Italian who was sort of an interpreter within squadron who could liaise with the local population, and they stayed with us throughout the...
When did you collect them? Was that straight off once you got into Italy, or later on?
They suddenly started. They appeared, one in each squadron, somewhere around Foligno, a bit before Foligno, right? Certainly after Castle di Sangro, so sometime around about then. And they say they weren't military. I don't know where they came from or how we got them, but they were, each one had one.
So, did you have much to do with this chap, your translator?
Yes, he was always there. You know, if you got a... if you went into a little village, you would sort of ask him to ask questions of different people, or to get any information you could. He was always there as an Italian liaison officer with the civilians mainly. After Bob had been taken prisoner, it was now our job to relieve Seaford on the same area. And soon we were up in the same positions, and we had some excellent positions, you could view from this particular area we were just after we took over from Sea Squadron. And again, as I say, it was a very long, hot days, and one soon became very, very tired, and so. Washed out really, because there was no shade, you had to be out in the where we were. That you had to be in such a position that you could get no shade anyway. So it was a relief when the sun went down and we could come back for a little bit of a break. I know at this particular day, I think I enjoyed the following day, but I had to make a reconnaissance up on one of the villages up in the mountains of this long, narrow track. And as you drove, it was quite a, I think, 6-7 miles, I think I had to go. And with the roar of the Daimler scout car engines sort of echoing, so it must have warned anybody that I was coming anyway. But it was quite a good drive, and as I say, gave everybody a warning. I was on my way. And as we climbed up the track, we came to a small hamlet and the end of the lines, end of the track. And the people up there were very, very friendly. I don't know whether they'd seen anyone for years or not, but they certainly made us very, very welcome. It was just myself and the driver, anyway. Greeted us friends. So that was one little, took one day out away from the sitting out in the sun. And the next day I had to escort the commanding officer around all the forward positions in our sector. And apart from the odd shell being directed at us, the day went well.
Did he come forward on a regular basis to visit forward units?
Yes, they used to come through quite often and keep in touch. And
how far forward would he go? Would he go right forward to the forward patrols?
To all the forward troops.
Yeah.
And I had to sort of make sure that he went to the right place and escorted him to make sure he didn't go out of the too far ahead to get taken prisoner at all. So,
did you have to hold him back sometimes?
No, he was good, you know, he knew the line anyway, because he would have his map with him, and it was just a matter of sort of making sure he got to the right troop positions, as well, or not. He wouldn't have been silly enough to have gone where it wasn't safe to go. And I think we managed to get back at return journey in beautiful moonlight.
Was he with you in your car, or was he in his own vehicle for that trip? Did he?
He was in his own vehicle for that, but I was sort of leading the way.
So you were riding shotgun on him.
That's right. Yes.
What vehicle did he have?
Well, mainly he used to come up in the jeep, but he was close enough. I'd be close enough to him if we were ever shot at or anything, that he could get into my car if necessary. You know, but. He used to have a jeep that would take him around anyway. And they were quite safe, really, providing that you there were no mines, or if you knew there was no enemy sort of either side of us. Although I think later on in Italy, up towards the end, up the other side of the Po, his driver was shot and killed.
There must always have been a risk of enemy stragglers being in the area.
Yeah, and the odd sniper or something, but he driver was actually killed. And then the next role for us was to the east of Perugia, the shift to the left. And that was south of Gubbio. And here we came under quite intense bombardment. There was the whole squadron in the area.
Well, what sort of bombardment? Would this be field artillery?
Yes,
or?
And I suppose we were in such positions where they could see us anyway. You know, we could be overlooked. Or they could see us going into a certain area and would say, right, that's where they're going to be in a minute, and
bring down a
barrage.
Did you suffer any losses to that?
Not at that stage, no. And as in the same area, Fortune had a small battle, and they killed one and took two prisoners. Exactly what it was, I think it was probably they were holed up in the house as an observation post, I think, the enemy. And they were peaceful and dealt with them. Got a couple of prisoners, infantry, and one was killed. But again, I sort of stress the long, hot days were endless. And we were on patrol as much as 17 hours at a time, which, as I say, it was great strain.
Must have reduced efficiency towards the end of the day when you were really tired.
You know, you lose your concentration. And also, the halls of darkness were so few, the time you got back, you had to get back out of the way anyway, from your patrol lines. And the time you got back and filled with petrol, had a meal or something, got your head down and started to go out again. Mm-hmm. And of course, you would then move forward again, and you had all that business of the ground you had been on. You couldn't just move down and say, right, they're here. Mm. You had to be very cautious going back to your positions, because they could well have been occupied in the night and say, right, we've set up a nice little
ambush on the way,
which would be so simple to do. So it was a case from the time you moved out at 4 in the morning, you were again very much on the alert until you got back there at night. And just around about this time, July the 3rd, and that was Saturday, two trooper on patrol on the road to Gubbio. There's a big monastery at Gubbio. And he had got out of his vehicle, Michael DePiro, and was sitting on a hillside, sort of amongst scrub, with his gunner. Yeah, it was his gunner. And they had Trooper Beatty, Scottish lad, but a bit bad. And they were on the side of the hill with their binoculars observing. And the enemy were over the valley, something. And a shell dropped quite close to them. And, not one shell, two or three shells. And Beaupont was severely wounded. Well, we were only about a few hundred yards from this position. The squad leader and I, and we went there. And we found Beatty, and both his legs were mangled. It was a real mess. But we couldn't see anything of Michael DePiro. And we started searching all the growth. And the squad leader said, well, you take BT back, get him looked after, because he'd have bled to death and he'd lost both his legs. So I bundled him into lifted him into a white scout car, and with a driver, I said, right, come on, and I sort of led the way back with him, sat in the car, and led the way, directed him to the nearest sort of field hospital. Probably 20 miles away from one.
Did he survive the journey?
I think I'd given him morphine.
Had you been able to do anything to stop the bleeding?
Well, apart from our field dressings, that sort of thing. We didn't have the MO there. It was a matter of, couldn't wait for the MO, get him back.
Yeah.
So I got him back to the field and went straight in, and and then he was operated on within a short time. We get the delivery machine, and I think they did save his legs, although he was badly wounded. And then I was on the radio, and they said, why, they found Michael DePiro in the end. He'd crawled amongst all the scrub and that, you know, for cover.
Yeah.
And he was very, very badly wounded. Some time after that they found him, and so they put him in an ambulance thing. By then there was an ambulance that they'd rung up for, and that had appeared. And they sent him back in that, and I waited at the hospital, or the field hospital there, and to hear right. When I opened the door of the thing, he was dead. Oh. There was nothing you could do about it. But he was fine. Very tall, blonde haired, you know, good looking, 6 foot something officer, a very good troop leader too, which is, you know, it was a very sad loss.
Why had he got out of his car and gone onto the hillside? Do you know what?
I think because if he'd have his armoured car, he couldn't put his armoured car in a position so that he could get a good view. So the obvious thing, and if you can't, you get out your armour car and you find a position which you can.
How far away, roughly, were the enemy, do you think?
Well, they should have been about 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 yards, something like that.
So if they were keeping observation,
they might have seen him.
Must have spotted him.
He wasn't in the open. You know, he was on the edge of this copse or scrub. So he could see, but they might have just sort of put a few shells over it anyway, you know, because they knew we were in the area. So it was very sad. It was a big loss, really. I wondered if we'd have found him the same time as we found Beattie, whether he might have been saved. I don't know. You see, but
how much later was it that he was found?
Half an hour. You see, whereas with Beattie, I mean, we put him in the thing straight away, and I got him there in, you know, in really good time, and.
How long do you think it was between him being wounded and you getting to him, you know, to him?
Well, I suppose, well, it'd be half an hour, perhaps. Would I have done 20 miles? It might not have been 20 miles. It might have been 10. It seems longer, you see. But I should say probably half an hour. And we went absolutely flat out.
You got to him as soon as he'd been wounded.
As soon as he'd been wounded, and I got him to the, actually, hospital outside the tent. You know, and sort of grabbed some people and said, look, and I think within 5 minutes he was in the operating room or tent. So I think, and had we got Michael DePiro in at the same time, he might have been saved, but no one can say that.
You can't tell. Was BT conscious while you were taking him back? Or?
By then he had passed out because the tremendous shock, I think.
And the morphine would help that, wouldn't it?
The morphine, yeah.
And you said that Beattie, you know, he'd caught shell splinters in his legs. What about the lieutenant? What was?
I'm not sure what his was, because when I looked at him, you know, you could see he was dead anyway. He was sort of chalked and still, you know, not much point in.
No.
Whether it's what Reader might have done when they found him, they might have seen and patched him up a bit, I think. But, as far as I was concerned, you know, he was dead and he didn't go into what the wounds were and anything like that.
Well, first, yes, I mean, time makes a lot of difference, doesn't it, in cases of acute injury.
The sooner you can get somebody,
the better.
To them. I mean, the main thing is to stem the loss of blood, and also treat a shock is another great thing, really. Which is so if you can get them to a medical aid, and also try to reassure them, is a big help as well. You know, if you're going along and hang on, you'll be there in a minute. You know, you're going to be alright, don't worry. They'll soon patch you up and something, and talk to them, nothing, and that makes a lot of difference too.
Did you, was there anything you could do specifically for shock when you pick people up?
Not really. No, I think the main thing is to try to calm them down and speak to them and give them a bit of confidence, you know, that there's help here. You're going to be all right, and so if you can, one or two of them, if they're not, so say, gosh, you're going to be home, you're going to be back in England, you know.
A blighty one.
Yeah, you're going to be back, leave us to it, you know, if you can joke with them as well, and all that sort of thing sort of helps. Of course, at the same time as all this, I mean, you're pretty frightened yourself. I mean, it sort of unnerves you quite a lot.
To see another man wounded.
You know, especially when you're there. And in some cases, it could have been me. Especially if it happened when you were sort of so close to them. You know, so you yourself talking, and you're reassuring yourself at the same time as you're reassuring them. I mean, just, I don't care what anybody said. Nobody can say that you went into any of these things and they weren't frightened. I mean, most of the time you were terrified, but you had to overcome that, any fear you had, the best you could. So that was a very sad loss. I think when Michael DeFeo sort of scrambled through into the scrub, he thought he was getting somewhere, you know, for safety.
Out of harm's way.
Yeah. Mm. As I say, it was very sad that we couldn't, we couldn't find him.
Presumably, Beatty couldn't do that because he was too badly smashed up.
Yeah, he was found straight away. Mm. As I say, we were there within... I don't know how we heard it. I think one of the other troops had quit. Mm. Shell had just dropped amongst them. Mm. I think we were probably... if we were... I don't think we'd be further away than this house to the crossroad.
That's about a couple of hundred yards, isn't it?
Like that. Mm. It might have been yes. Further, but...
Did you go forward in your vehicles, or
yes.
Did you go up on foot?
No, I went up with vehicles. Mm. Straight away after that, we just had 275mm guns first brought in, on half tanks. So straight away we bombarded that position for about half an hour.
The enemy position.
We could see the shells exploding, and so that gave us a little bit of satisfaction, you know, that
get them back.
So that didn't make up for the loss of someone like that. And what have I got? The American Day of Independence was the 4th of July.
Yes.
Has that been about then? An update when he was. Well, it must have been, I think, because that was the 3rd of July, isn't it? When Michael, so the next day, the 4th of July, that we had a tremendous storm. And strong winds, hailstones the size of marbles, sort of rattling on the armoured cars. I mean, quite a difference. The scorching heat we've been used to, and just like machine gun bullets bouncing off. Made quite a relief from the normal type of weather we had.
A summer storm. Mm. Mm. Did you carry on operating through that?
Oh, yes. Mm. Well, there's not much you could do. I mean, all you can do is sort of wait for it to end. And, on the 6th of July, again, a troop of C Squadron were ambushed, sustaining casualties of 1 killed and 4 missing, presumed made prisoner of war. Again, the same tactics, which they were paying off the enemy. And I don't know if we'd have had a platoon of infantry with each troop just go on ahead of us, whether that would have made different, that could well have done.
But then that would have slowed you down,
that
wouldn't it?
Slowed us down, and plus the fact that probably the 4th Infantry had been the ones who were taking the casualties. And after all, it was our job to reconnoitre. That sort of tactics they had, the ambush sort of does, that's so easy to do on those sort of roads.
Did anyone come up with any ideas for reducing the danger from these ambushes? You know, do you remember being discussed what you might be able to do? So,
well, there wasn't really. It was just a matter of all having a good look for you. But there again, if someone wants to ambush you, they could be...
If they're around the corner...
Or they could be 20 yards off the side of the road.
Yeah.
So it could be a haystack. Mm. Or a building, or anything, a little shed, you couldn't sort of fire everything that was a possibility. It's just one of those things you had a good look, but you could conceal a man with a rocket launcher so easily. After this seaswarming one, we had a few quiet days. We still had lots of patrols out, but we knew the enemy was gradually withdrawing to a stronger line of defence. And we did send out a big patrol on foot, and Matt Abraham led it. And they went through into enemy territory, you know, to try to get any information they could, which is an unusual thing for us to do. And they spent 2 days out there searching, but they saw nothing at all. So it seemed as though the enemy had sort of gone well back.
How many men were there in this big patrol?
I think somewhere around about 20, 25. Yeah, it's fairly big.
That sounds almost like a fighting patrol rather than a reconnaissance patrol.
Well, both. I think not being infantry, and we took as much firepower as we could.
Were you involved in that?
I didn't go out on
it. You didn't go on it?
As I say, Matt Abraham led it.
Do you know how much sort of distance they covered in that 2 days?
On the map I could show you if I had it, the sort of thing. Well, I suppose that could do about a 10 mile area. They sort of went and probably did a block sort of thing to the next sort of position, I think, where we thought the enemy might have sort of made a line. It's just a case of going, a lot of it we knew he wouldn't be, but then you sort of thought, well, this is sort of his next line where he might be, say to a river line or some bound or something.
Did they make any contact on that?
No.
So the enemy just abandoned the area?
Yeah, so it meant we could go forward that much further. Before we expected to bump the enemy again. After that, again, C Squadron was attacked during the night and lost 2 armoured cars, but no casualties.
What sort of attack was that?
I think by infantry and... because, you know, we hadn't met up with any tanks or anything in that particular area. You see, it was all sort of coming up against infantry with rocket launchers.
Do you have any idea what sort of scale that attack was?
No, it was probably might have been on the same line as the one that attacked Bob McGuire's troop. Well, it might have been a platoon attack as opposed to a
company.
Certainly they lost 2 of their armoured cars.
How were they lost? Were they lost to rocket?
To rockets, yeah. And again, I think probably the crews might well have not been in the thing, but sort of good then, because they all seemed to sleep on the ground.
Beside the car.
Had their arms with them, or something, or some protection or something. So.
Do you know any details of that German attack? How it was carried out?
No, because that was with C Squadron.
Oh, I see. So, yes. Didn't get the full report.
It came over, and you hear it on the radio, and you don't hear the details from anyone until you meet up with them, and that could be, months, and by then, it's not the interest there as the... would have been had you met the person the next day and could get all the information.
Be old news. It would be old news by that time.
Yes. Of course, people, you know, didn't used to make a note of it. Because, you didn't. I mean, it's now, with hindsight, you could have got all the information and written it down for the sake of days like this when we could.
Did you said the squadron had no casualties. Did the enemy have any casualties from that attack?
Not that I know of. They might well have done. But again, if they got wounded, they'd take them back.
Yes.
Unless they were dead. I think if they'd have had any dead...